Willkommen zu einer neuen Folge Woman Coverage. Heute haben Anna und ich wieder mal einen Gast bei uns im Podcast. Wir freuen uns riesig auf Andrew Griffin. Kurz ein paar Worte zu unserem heutigen Gast. Andrew ist vor 4,5 Jahren nach Deutschland gezogen, genauer gesagt in die kleine bayerische Stadt Passau. Ursprünglich kam der gebürtige Amerikaner, um den Quarterback für die Passau Pirates zu geben. Inzwischen ist er aber weit mehr für den Verein. Der 28-Jährige ist nämlich inzwischen auch der QB des Teams, führte die Pirates in der Saison 2017 zur Meisterschaft und später auch zum Aufstieg. Aktuell spielt Andrew mit dem Team in der Bavarian Bowl League ab 2022, höchstwahrscheinlich in der GFL 4. Gleich vorab, wir werden das Gespräch mit Andrew auf Englisch führen, da unser Gast zwar inzwischen sehr gut Deutsch spricht, wir ihm aber gerne die Chance geben wollen, aus seinem kompletten Wortschatz zu schöpfen. Viel Spaß und herzlich willkommen, Andrew.
Dankeschön.
Thank you for being our guest. Can you maybe take us back in time to when you first played football in the States? Can you tell us a little bit, at what age did you join your first team?
Yeah, I joined my first team when I was my first flag football team when I was 10 years old and my first tackle football team when I was 12 years old. My mother wouldn't let me play tackle football until I went to middle school. So yeah, my first real football experience with helmets and pads was when I was 12 years old, and I wasn't a quarterback in the first couple weeks, but after a few practices, I got moved to quarterback and I haven't played anything else since.
Awesome. I have a question for Anna. Anna, I don't know if you saw it on Netflix, but there's a new like hit show, I would say, around American football, which is called Titletown High. It's about an American high school team located in Georgia. Did you watch it? And did you know before you watched this show more about the football programs in the States? Or was it like the first touch point for you?
I've seen bits and pieces of the series. I haven't watched it completely yet. But yeah, I'm familiar with Georgia football. One of my best friends comes from a suburb outside of Atlanta, so I know a little bit about Georgia football, and yeah, it's intense down there.
Anna, did you watch the show?
Unfortunately, I have not watched the show. It's on my watch list right now, and I really want to watch it, but I have no time at the moment to watch it. Have you already seen it?
Yeah, I've binge watched it basically.
Okay, that is a review.
No, not really, because it was more like I had time on my hands and I was bored. And it was in the end, it was about American football, so pretty low. To give you some background info, for me it was like the first touch point with high school football. I've never like watched any show or seen any real games. So I was really shocked, how they treated those young players who are still basically kids. I mean, they were like 15, 16, like freshman, sophomore, junior. And especially the coach, who is apparently like a legend in high school football. His coaching style was like super old school. He's like, I guess he's around 60, 70 years old, and he likes screamed a lot and bullied young players. And I was really shocked, like that's still the status quo in high school. Maybe like, Andrew, do you know a little bit more like about your time in high school? Is it like, was it back then normal to get like screamed at and be bullied, especially from the adults?
Ooh, that's a great question and a complicated answer. With my first, the first regime that I was with in high school was under a guy named Mark Holdren, and he was much more new age, was really against kind of a lot of those practices and tried to have more of a player focused training environment as opposed to a kind of authoritarian training environment. But then the second 2 years, or halfway through for my third and fourth seasons, they switched to more of an old school approach. And my high school head coach, Jeff Hesselmeyer, he's unfortunately passed away, but he was a very kind man, but the overall culture was very much authoritarian in that coaches say something and players listen and there's no real answer or talking back or communication, which was something that was a big part of my journey that I really fought hard against and really didn't enjoy. During my high school experience, I, you know, would often get in trouble with coaches for trying to share my opinion and trying to say, hey, I think this would be a good idea. which culminated my senior year. There was a certain play we wanted to run, an inside trap play, because we were running power over and over again. I'll still remember we were playing in Oxnard, and we weren't doing very well on offense. And I talked to my coach and said, hey, we need to run this inside trap play. And he said, you shut your bleeping mouth and do what I say, blah, blah, blah. And we ran power again. It got stuffed. Wow. I came back to the sideline. Yeah, I came back to the sideline. I said, and back with, this is my senior year, so my career at high school is almost over, so I don't have many fears. And I just said to him, I said, run that bleeping trap play now, back at him. And he said, yeah, shut the blank bleep up and run your damn trap play. And I remember I handed it off to Marquise Glover, and it went for 45 yards, and one was our best drive of the night. And I ran back to the sideline and said, hey, I got another play call for you too. And threw a touchdown on the next play. And I think it was in that moment too that kind of set the journey that was where I'm at now, and realizing I wanted to be a coach, and realizing that maybe I have some ability to see the game, or that I wanted to be a part of it in that capacity, because I was so frustrated with my experience in high school and having people tell me all the time, I don't know what I'm talking about, or I don't know. And I had my own self-doubts as a 17-year-old and 16-year-old, but having some of that validation my senior year, and then through the years kind of seeing a lot of the things I thought even when I was 16, 17 years old about how football can be trained and how football can be played, kind of being affirmed in my time with the Bassau Pirates has been a really meaningful experience to me, especially speaking to my younger self who was 16 and 17 and really frustrated with how adults, what adults said I was not and, you know, wasn't able to do or wasn't possible to do with our guys. And that's kind of inspired me to try and make a better experience, or hopefully, you know, as I'm a coach, create a better experience for the players that I'm able to be fortunate enough to coach.
Yeah, that's super cool. Back then, like, how were injuries treated? Because, like, also in this show, it's shown that, for example, the QB gets injured at the elbow, and nobody really cares, and everybody's saying to him, like, oh, get up and don't be such a pussy, basically. And that was also a point where I was like really shocked, I would say, that they didn't even like look at it. There was no doctor inside, like nobody gave a shit, basically.
Yeah, and that's a difficult thing in football, I have to say, as a coach, because especially in Germany, when you have guys who are playing for the first time, it is a sport where you have to differentiate pain from injury. And so the common old school approach to that is assume everything's pain until you prove it's injury, which I'm not the biggest fan of, but it's not to say that every injury should be coddled and said, hey, it's okay, you can, you know, step out. You know, for instance, an injury that you see often in American football is rib injuries. And if you have a broken rib, it's something that you need to immediately not play anymore, without a doubt, and sit it out. And without an x-ray, it's hard to tell the difference between a broken rib and a bruised rib. And a lot of people play with bruised ribs. It's painful, but the risk potential for hurting it worse isn't nearly as high as, of course, with a broken rib. And that's often on the field without an x-ray. How do you differentiate that to a player? And that sometimes can be tough. But I can say that when I was in high school, that was often a difficult thing as well, kind of proving your masculinity through your ability to deal or handle with pain. And so it became a bit of a social game. If you kind of built a reputation for being tough, no one would question your injuries. And if you had the reputation for not necessarily being as tough, whether it be your personality, and this is, you know, 14, 15, 16-year-old kids judging your toughness, you know, socially that can create a lot of pressures. And whether it's an elbow injury or a head injury, that can get really tough on developing kids who are also figuring themselves out socially, psychologically, and not only, you know, physically with what is going on with their bodies.
Yeah, for sure,
because it's such a critical age as well.
Yeah, I mean, everything's in flux. I mean, the ups and downs when you're 16 and 17 are much higher, the waves, the highs and lows, and the feelings of self-confidence or how you deal with pain. And it used to be that you thought that kids were either tough or they're not. And as I've gotten, you know, done more and more, especially in Germany, I really feel as though toughness is something that can be trained. If people are exposed to things in the right way, they naturally can kind of figure out for themselves, what they can and can't deal with, or what they should and should play with. Now, I believe in medical professionals, and we have that organized with the Pirates, that I do not make any medical decisions, or whether a player can play, and I don't want to make those decisions. But it's really hard for a 16-year-old to make those decisions, and it's really harder when that 16-year-old is being pressured by other 16 and 17-year-olds. Hey, tough it out. Stop being a bleep, and and play this game out. It's really tough, and not ideal if you ask me.
Totally get that point.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about high school football shows, I watched QB1. This is one you can also watch on Netflix. And I really, really enjoyed that one. Have the both of you watched this show?
I've seen episodes, and I'm very familiar with the players that were, especially Spencer Rattler.
Yeah.
I'm very familiar with him. So I've seen bits and pieces of the episodes. But I haven't seen it all the way through. But I would love to hear what you guys gathered from it.
I still haven't watched it.
Aw, I have said to you so many times you should watch it.
Yeah, I've been told as well. I've been told as well.
I was busy with Title Town High.
So I love to see the background of those players, and also how they functioned within their families, especially Spencer Rattler. Because there are some topics they don't really talk about in this show, and it's just hearsay, I would say. So it's, and I was researching so much on the internet, and you cannot find anything really, and it's just like some bits and pieces in a show.
Is there a possibility that I could? What question did you have, Anna?
Yeah, just there were those rumors that he has done something, but...
Oh, yes, I've heard about the rumors, yes. I've heard of those rumors too, and I've heard from some other sources that it did happen, because I know some people in Arizona. Yeah. But yeah, that's just part of what Anna's alluding to is inappropriate behavior with one's girlfriend on campus. Okay. I think, Anna, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, so there was just on the show, nobody really talked about it. So there was like they played some radio bits where they questioned why he wasn't playing, and because there was the question, was he hurt? Is something else going on?
Academic.
And, yeah. So, and no real answer to that. And so I really liked QB1 and Titsy. Yeah. You should really watch it.
Yeah. Finally, I got another reminder. So. But I mean, in Germany, the most people only get socialized with American football through silly teenage movies back in the days. Now it's more like those shows. And normally the football players are portrayed as attractive, but really stupid, and mostly more like the bad guys, I would say. Hearing this stereotype or prejudice as an American, would you agree with this cliche, or would you say, no, it's not true?
I actually think because as I was entering high school is when social media started to move. And the thing that I've really loved about this development is I think that was somewhat true, because that was what the kids would see. It was not cool to be smart or do something else. Your identity for a lot of guys, and a lot of guys I played high school football with, was surrounded by being a high school football player. You know, I still have guys who I played high school football with now. 10 years ago was the last time they played organized tackle football, writing me, talking about this is, remember back in the day. So it was a big part of this from 16 to 18, your identity. And because of that, it kind of limits you at points. But I think really with the advent of social media, one thing that I think positive has come out of it is that you can see more and more different influences. It kind of spreads the influence out, where you're not just seeing, you're a just the jock football player guy, but that there are football players who are also doing some stuff involved with art or school or being a great student and involved in different creative activities or involved in certain community projects. And I think that is one thing about the next generation that I've seen that I'm really excited about. But I think from a German perspective, what I think is maybe makes this cliche somewhat funnier or harder to understand is I don't think Germany really has the same level of experience with the local pressure and the social pressure put on athletes at that age. You can go, you know, even from the highest level of a Spencer Rattler, you have national media coverage, millions of social media followers, all about a sport that is being played by 15, 16, 17, and sometimes 18-year-olds. And all this pressure to perform and to do things, you when you're pressured, you kind of go what you're comfortable with and live into a personality type at times. And even so, at a smaller level, like with my high school, there was no one on my high school team that played Division I and no one that was going to go to the NFL with the guys I played against even. But still, everyone watches your games. It's the thing on Friday nights. And so everyone sees when you drop a pass. And, you know, my high school games played in front of thousands of people and all your peers of the school, the pressure to perform kind of creates naturally a different personality because you have to make it all about the game because it's the pressure you feel from your surrounding community is so high, which doesn't really happen in Germany. You play your sports, your U19 sports, but it's usually not in front of your entire school and all your teachers and all your family and all your friends and all of their family and all of their friends. And I think it just creates a really interesting social dynamic for football players. And I think especially in the past, you saw that guys would just get super locked into this role of this is who I am. It just creates a really different cultural dynamic than I think is here in Germany.
Yeah, that's a... Sorry.
Yeah, that's so true, so true. And also when you see those guys, those high school guys go to a college and speak on a camera with a microphone in front, mm-hmm. they are so confident. And I think there are very, very low amount of people in Germany who would be so confident speaking up in front of camera. And for them, mm-hmm. it's so normal.
Yeah, I mean, in the United States, they're trained. If you go to a D1 school, you get trained on how to speak to the media. There is no way around it. And so they're supposed to be confident. And now, too, with this new development, with the ability for college football athletes to sign endorsement contracts, I mean, so much of their brand, as much as I hate that word, is connected to how well they can speak in front of camera and what kind of character they have. And it's done some good that I'm really excited about because now there's less control by authoritarian coaches about how players express themselves, which I think is a good thing. Mm-hmm. It makes it so there's just a lot more pressure on kids at this age to learn how to handle those environments. But it's crazy thinking about it from a European perspective because you look at an 18-year-old and you said you have no business in front of a camera. Here people are talking to, you know, high profile journalists.
Yeah,
it's really crazy. And you've made like such a good point, Andrew, because like if you compare it, it's just not comparable because in Germany, even if you look at like the most like successful sports like football, you have those kids going to like a academy and train really hard, let's say at FC Bayern or Dortmund, but like nobody goes to those like games from U17, U18. Nobody really cares. And only if they start like playing for, let's say, the U21 German national team, or if they join like a really big club afterwards, then they get like attention. But before, I mean, then they are already 19 years old or 20, and that's way later than like, let's say, 15 years old. So it's completely different. And you can also see it when they talk to media, like even like now, players who have been in the spotlight for 5 to 10 years, Jérôme Boateng, for example, if he gets interviewed, he's still so like.
I don't think he's a difficult example.
Yeah, but I mean, there are quite a few that are really like not confident to speak to a journalist or not confident to speak in front of a camera, and even those people have like had media training as well. So, I think. Yeah, it's completely different. And for us, it's really hard to grasp this like social aspect as well. I think that would be even like a whole podcast episode, only this point, because that's so interesting.
Yeah, Totally.
Yeah.
Now we talked already about the star quarterbacks of those high schools. Andrew, what do you think about the star rating system, and would you change anything about the football system in the States?
Oh, well, those are two, I think, two very different questions. The recruiting ranking system, you know, I don't think it's a bad one. It's actually pretty accurate, even with the NFL. You know, if you really do statistical analysis of what athletes are predicted to be good at 18, you know, a vast majority of them, they're obviously outliers, but a vast majority are the ones who become the top picks in the NFL draft. So at least from an empirical standpoint, it's a pretty effective system, and there's enough eyes on the game that they get a lot of the stuff right. Now, every NFL fan is frustrated when their, you know, team doesn't pick a player that they pick, doesn't work out. But overall, the statistical accuracy, I think, is decent. But what would I change about the American system? Man, that is a deep, deep, deep question. You want to talk about a podcast point. How would you make American sports different? All I can say is this, is that I personally, from a professional standpoint, the American system is better. From an amateur standpoint, the American system is god-awful. And unfortunately, that differentiation isn't able to really survive and in either realm of American football, whether it be in America or in Europe, very well. So in America, you have, if you're not a really good player, meaning if you're not in the top, you know, 2% of your area, you're done playing football in any real fashion at 17. Normally, because your season is your fall of your senior year, and most people have birthdays in, you know, February and March. So you're done at 17 and you never get to put on a helmet again except for an alumni game. And there really is no way around it if you're not a college player, right? Where also, though, when you're a player in Germany, you know, you can play for fun, but it's also because of the development of the youth programs not being as high. It's getting easier, but it's still not easy for a German 14-year-old to fall in love with the sport and then prepare themselves for the NFL. Schwäbisch Hall and some other GFL1 teams, some of the bigger clubs in Europe, are doing a better and better job of it, but still it's not there at the American level. But at the same time, America has no way for a college student who wants to try out the sport to really try it out. There is no intramural football teams, really. It's just too much to organize and too much to do. So I would say, what would I change about the American system? I wish that there could be a way for both ways of the sport to cohabitate. You know, in Germany, there's such a wonderful culture with soccer about, you know, playing with your friends in your local team. And then also there's this, I forget the name of it, there's a funny name, but the old guys who just drink beer and play soccer, but it's more drinking beer than soccer on Sundays, and how that's still able to have a community. And I can say for myself personally, I never had the athletic ability to be an NFL or Division I prospect. I just wasn't given those genetic tools. But I can say that I love football, and I love that it gets to continue to be played at any age in Europe, and people can just play the sport and love it. And I really wish there was more of that in the States. I think there'd be a healthier relationship with the sport if it wasn't all about just those 4 years from 14 to 18 that matter so much for your playing experience.
Yeah, I love that answer.
We want to, of course, also know a little bit more about your journey. I know personally that you finished high school and you also went to a college and you have a degree, as far as I know. What happened then? Because now you're in Europe for some years, but what happened between college and Germany?
Yeah. No, I think even going back to high school, I think my story is a really unique one. Going into my senior year of high school, I was competing to be the starting quarterback with another senior. And I would say that we were the two best quarterbacks in our city. There's four teams in our city that year, but unfortunately we're both on the same team. And I broke my ankle going into my senior year and didn't really know it. I tried to play through it, but I was never really the same. Got another MRI and found out it was broken. And so because of that, I didn't have any strong recruiting. I started a game, threw a couple touchdowns, was in during it, but it was obviously him and I both playing, and I was limping around the field, which is a recurring story for me. dealing with injuries. But after that, I decided that I was going to stay in my hometown and play for a junior college. So one thing I think both of you have probably seen is this Last Chance U, the
yes,
Netflix series.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was at my own version of a Last Chance U in Santa Barbara City College. And I was there for a year and a half. And I then was behind again, another Division I prospect who went on. I think he's now, Jared Evans, is playing in China and was in the XFL of China for a bit. And
what? They have American football in China? I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Oh. I think he was playing in China. He's still there playing there. He ended up playing University of Cincinnati on national televised game. And here I am, a 6 foot, or sorry, I'm Mita Trajanoksig, you know, 75 kilogram Spieler mit einer Division I star. And yeah, okay. And so I had the opportunity with some scrimmage film and things from practice, playing against really good competition, to go to a Division II. So I went to a small Division II school in Bethany, Oklahoma, was there for 2 years. The coaching staff was going to change. I transferred to another school in Kentucky, and I was there for 4 days. And I said, you know what? Football is not that important to me. I'm going to be done. I think this is the end of my playing career. I don't need to transfer there. And I, in that moment, decided to switch back to my old school and finish my academic career. But it was during that time I got a call from one of my best friends, Spencer Wood. He, on our last day, he was one of my best friends. We played together in Santa Barbara City College. And on our last day throwing together, he was a quarterback, he's a receiver, I was a quarterback. On the very last day before we both moved, he was going to move to Indiana. I was moving to Oklahoma to continue playing. He ran an in route and tore his ACL, which is a catastrophic knee injury that has you out for 6 to 8 months. It was heartbreaking. I was there on the last day. We're preparing together as we're about to separate and go on to our next schools. He tore his ACL. But as I was there at SNU and seeing that the program wasn't everything I was hoping it would be, he gave me a call and said, Andrew, I got a big decision to make. And I said, what's going on, Spencer? He's like, well, a random guy that I did a camp with when I was 17 asked me if I wanted to play football in Poland. And I said, what? And at this point, I had no idea that football existed in Europe. I'd been to Europe once as a kid, but I had no idea it existed. And he said, yeah, what do you think? Well, the big decision was if he played in Europe, he could no longer play college football in America, because at that point he would be a professional athlete and he'd be disqualified from playing in the amateur leagues in college. And I said, of course you do it, man. You got to take this opportunity in Poland. That's a once in a lifetime thing. And he did it. He had a lot of fun there. He had a lot of great success. He was really glad about the decision. And it kind of pushed him to being a coach. And he did all those things. And that stayed in the back of my head. And then my senior year, I decided to just put my film up, from 2 or 3 years earlier. And I had it up there and I was looking at teams, trying to communicate with them, see if I could find a spot. But I didn't have the amazing track record. It wasn't any Spencer Rattler. So it wasn't like I had teams knocking down my door. But then I got a call through a month and a half before my senior year of college was over. I hadn't played in a year and a half, any football really, not with a helmet on. And they contacted me and said, hey, do you want to play football in Brazil in June? And I was graduating in May. And I said, sure, why not? At that point, I thought I was going to go to law school and, become a lawyer and do all those things as I finished my bachelor's. But I said, hey, 6 months after I graduate from college in Brazil on the beach in Recife, that doesn't sound too bad. And I went down there and I was in a favela for the Recife Pirates, which was a bit of a, there's two big teams in the city, and one was the kind of more, it was the lower socioeconomic team and one was the richer team. And I played for the poorer team. We had a 14-hour bus ride to one of our games, and no hotel and things like that. And it was a crazy experience. I got super sick down there, had to go into Brazilian hospitals. But we had a successful season and I felt as though we were making some changes in the program that were really going to lead to a lot of success. Again, I think I'm a better coach than I am player, if we're being completely honest. And years later now, they ended up winning a championship and things. And one of the best messages I got from them was the former assistant coach, who's now the head coach, saying, hey, we installed a lot of things that you had said, and it led to a championship. Thank you very much. And that was kind of one of my highlights of that experience. But as I was leaving, I had this experience in Brazil. We made the playoffs, or we're fighting for a playoff spot. We didn't make it at the end because of injuries or drop passes. I don't know. Football is sometimes funny. The ball is shaped really weird, and so it doesn't always bounce the way you hope it will. And there's a lot of chance involved. But we still a successful season and great to get to play football again. And what happened in Brazil is I was told I was just going to quarterback, and I ended up having to be the OC and call the plays as well, which I was happy to do, but I didn't have much time to prepare and wasn't able to, you know, do all the things I wanted to do because you only have 3 weeks to put a whole playbook in, and football can get quite complicated with the plays and what everyone's supposed to do and such. So I was, you know, reciting numbers in Portuguese, telling receivers what route to run, trying my best to try and put 20 points on the board. And sometimes we did, sometimes we didn't. And then after that, I was deciding without finish. So that was June to December. And then I was planning on coming back. I didn't have any interest from other teams at that point and didn't know what I was going to do, and was already looking at apartments to move back to Oklahoma to start preparing for law school. And then in the span of a few hours, this friend Spencer, the one who told me about football, was offered the coaching job in Passau, but then was simultaneously offered the coaching job to be the offensive coordinator for the Munich Cowboys, which is first league. And so we turned down the Passau Pirates, but said to him, hey, I know a guy. You should maybe consider Andrew Griffin to be your head coach. And an hour later, I get a call from the, you know, the Vorstand of the Passau Pirates, and they talked to me for a bit and said, oh yeah, you would make a good fit. And they hired me just to be a head coach for them. And I said, you know, hey, six months in Germany after 6 months in Brazil, yeah, I can do that. You know, just one more trip. And that first season, we won a championship, had a lot of success, had a lot of fun. Really felt like I got to come into my own and get to experience a lot of those successes that I didn't necessarily get to experience with teams or as a player, and was able to really kind of live a dream come true in that kind of coming full circle in my football story and seeing how everything worked out and working out the way it did and getting to have that championship season. So that's kind of my football story in the quickest nutshell I could give.
Thank you.
I'm not sure. Was that okay? Yes. It's been a story. It's been
it
a story.
It could be a movie, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of which, you've already mentioned the movie that the students made of our next season.
Yeah.
I might have to share that finally with the world, as much as I hate that. But they didn't get all my background in it. But that was a tough experience for me, but I persevered. And the best advice through that, and this was probably the biggest life changer, was from my dear friend, and he was a youth pastor to me at the time, Rob Crawford. And as I was struggling and limping through my senior year and having the amazing season I thought that maybe could get me recruited for living out my dream of being a college football player, because I love the sport so much, he said to me, Andrew, if you really love the sport, do you love the sport? And I said, I love the sport, and I think I love the sport more than anyone else on this team. He said, if you really love the sport, then you don't need success to play it. If you really love something, do you really need to be the star? Do you really need to be the guy in charge? Do you really need the notoriety or the fame? And that was kind of a wake-up call for me as a 17-year-old, and a life lesson is the things you love, are you doing them? What reasons are you really doing them for? And it was that moment I decided, hey, I love football because I love football. And I've chosen that passion. That's going to be my passion. And crazily enough, it's led me to Passau, Germany. And I'm now almost fluent, or basically fluent, in another language, trying to study my master's in German this upcoming fall. And
made
a life for myself in another country. And all that's because I loved football and all the things that I brought from that.
Yeah, I mean, we are super proud of you and your journey. I hope you know that.
Yes, of course, Titsy.
And it's so inspiring, really.
No, and I think especially Americans, a lot of them don't take the leap of like leaving the country. A lot of Americans like only go to Mexico, maybe, and never like go to Europe, especially like living in Europe, then learning the language as well. Because I mean, with English, you don't have to basically, you know, everybody speaks some English, even like in this little town, Passau, where the people are really like more like, yeah. Not that international, I would say, but still, like, it's crazy what you did in those years.
Yeah, but one thing Europeans got to understand about our language difficulty is learning how to learn languages is a skill both in your study ability, but also it's a skill psychologically. that Americans are not often, you know, immersed in. My first language class was when I was at the same time I started playing football, 12 years old. I had my first language class the first time I started playing tackle football. And it was a Spanish class, of course. The middle school I went to, and I'm from California. I don't think I mentioned that earlier, but the middle school I went to is 98% Latino. And so I think close to 30 or 40% English as a second language. And I get into my first level of Spanish at 12 years old, and I say, "Yo soy Andrew Griffin." And everyone in the class starts laughing because they're all already fluent in Spanish. And they're just taking the class to get an A because it's high school, right? Or, you know, there isn't this environment where you can learn a language. My friend Spencer, I mentioned him earlier, he just so happened to have today a Facebook post, and he's a bit of a social media influencer, motivational guy now. He's a high school coach back in the States in Kentucky. And he had a great quote that I really liked. Hold on one second, I'm pulling it up, that he posted today. Is a foreign accent is a sign of bravery. And Americans don't really learn that bravery of speaking in a foreign accent because there is no hope in being fluent. You don't really have that immersification. You don't have that idea in your head. You think, you know, you just, there's an arrogance at play, but there's also a lack of experience at play, and you don't learn how to learn a language. And I had no idea the kind of basic habits needed in order to get good at a language. And it was a real learning experience for me. And it was one of the hardest educational things I've ever done, not because it's hard to learn a word, but it's learning the habits which make a language possible. You can't cram a language in a day. It's habitual. It's every day. It's just a little bit at a time. And yeah, I had to learn that too, from a lot of shame from our friends here in Germany for my German being so poor. But now I can hold my own and have conversations. And that's been a real game changer for me as well, because it's allowed me. And you mentioned that Americans have a hard time coming over to Europe. And there is a certain flight issue and how long it takes, but a lot of Americans have trouble staying. And I think, you know, I was lucky and fortunate enough that there was other things that kept me here in Europe that let me get past this point. But I know that as an American football player in Europe, you're just the American football player in Europe. That's your whole identity. That's how people see you. And it's not until you can speak the language that I became Andrew, the American who happens to be a football player here. I became my own person once I could communicate the language, because you enter in any social situation and you can communicate and no one has to make any apologies or do anything for you. No one has to make any excuses. I can participate fully in conversations now. And that's been a game changer since I improved my German through Corona. I'm now my own social individual in another country. And a lot of Americans feel the pain of being the odd man out in social situations or not knowing what's going on around them. And so it's hard to get assimilated here.
Yeah, totally get that.
We have one last question for you. You are now coach and quarterback at the same time, right?
Yes, since 2017. Yes.
That is pretty unusual, I would say. How do you feel with like this double role, and do you ever face like any challenges because of it?
Do I face any challenges, guys? We had a game on Saturday that we won, first home game of the season, and I pulled the ball on a zone read option, thought I was on the 5-yard line, held the ball up in the air. It turns out I was on the 10, and I got a 15-yard taunting penalty. You know, how do you, as an authoritarian drill sergeant, if that's how you were going to coach, how do you say to your team, keep your mind in the game, guys, and then you be the one gets called for taunting and get the 15-yard penalty? We ended up scoring on the drive and ended up scoring on a similar play and ran it in finally. But, you know, I run into this problem on a daily basis. I'm a trainer. I'm a coach. I need to hold them accountable to, you know, giving effort and doing the things they're supposed to do. And at the same time, I have to be their friend and their teammate, have to be involved in the building of a community, because these guys, I can't treat them like, you know, soldiers. They need to be the ones who also help me clean up the field and maybe help me with data input or communicating with certain players, or it's a team effort. It's guerrilla warfare. And so it is very unusual, but I think the most impactful thing is that I finally I was put to the test. Do you have to be, to kind of take this conversation full circle as well, do you have to be an authoritarian drill sergeant to be a good football coach? That's the heavy question. And that has also been a very difficult one for me personally, because my teams in my first 3 years were known for their offense, that we could run the ball, we could pass the ball, we could score a lot of points. But our defense were often made fun of and criticized for not being tough enough. And because of that, I got a lot of pushback from people saying, well, maybe being the head coach and quarterback leads to your team being soft, leads to your team not being tough enough to have a good defense, to hit hard, to play hard. You know, if they had a real authoritarian leader, maybe they would be able to do these things better. And in my heart of hearts, you know, bringing me back to my 17-year-old self is, you don't need to be an asshole in order to be tough. That's really what I believed, but I hadn't shown that. And at least through our first two games this season, I would argue that our defense has been the stronger side of our team in both these two games that we've won. And we've done it with a first-year DC who's done a great job, and Jimmy, who's an old player that Rafi, TT's fiance, played with, but did so without a guy who yells. Jimmy doesn't yell. I don't yell. And sometimes I yell when players get frustrated, but I'm never yelling in a way where I'm demeaning the players around them, around us. I still have to hold people accountable, but you can play this very tough and physical sport with injuries and with pain and with tiredness. And you can do it so in a way where you're friends and you're speaking to the players at more of an eye to eye level, and not this, I'm better than you, I tell you what to do, you do what I say. And there's some times where it gets testy, where you have to do what I say at this moment right now because I don't have time to explain. But I at least try to have, and I think I'm forced to have, this relationship with players where I give them my plan, I tell them what we're doing, and I think they show me at least enough of respect that we can play together and do it. But I had a 15-yard penalty in the last game, and you know, we were all, a lot of us were hanging out after the game and enjoying some beers, and I had to bring a case of beer as my penalty. The head coach and quarterback had to bring his case of beer penalty for his 15-yard sports conduct penalty. But that was what they said to me. I came back on the sidelines after my taunting penalty, and my team said, yeah, coach, das ist safe, ein Kassen. Ja, du musst ein Kassen geben, das geht nicht. ja, du hast recht, und ich habe mein Kassen mitgebracht, und ja, alles war wieder gut, und wir haben ein paar Witze gemacht über meine Fälle, aber yeah, it's, I have to have that mentality with the team, and we have to be at a more equal level. But so far for us at this level of amateur football, with guys who just want to have fun, it works. And I'm not the best coach in the world, but you know, the guys are having a great time and we're playing as a team, and I mean, those are what, that's what really matters to me.
Yeah, sounds really like inspiring, and I hope like there are more coaches in the future who take it eye to eye, and not like, as I said, like earlier in the conversation, like I really hope that this will be the future of football, especially also in Germany. If you guys want to follow Andrew's journey, you can follow him on Instagram. We will put his Instagram handle in the description. It's griffin_agb. And yeah, you can also, if you live in the area of Passau, you can also join the Passau Pirates, of course, or just watch a game of them. And what else to say? I think, like, as well, and Anna, as well as myself, we are really happy that you joined the podcast. It was such a inspiring and, insightful conversation.
Yes.
Yeah, and hopefully in the future you will be back as a guest, because I have the feeling there would be so much more to talk about. And it's really, really interesting to get like the insights from an American perspective, because in the end we are all more like from the European standpoint. And so, yeah, it was really great. Yeah, for the next episode, it will be out in 2 weeks. We will talk about the European League of Football, but I think we can talk more about that in 2 weeks. Right, Anna?
Yes.
Yes.
We will.
Ja, wir freuen uns, euch dann wieder in 2 Wochen zu hören, und sagen vielen Dank, Andrew. Ja, hoffen, euch hat die Folge gefallen. Lasst uns gerne ein bisschen Feedback da.
Macht's gut. Ciao.
Danke, Titi. Danke, Anna. Ciao.